Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We continue to march through the season on the game plan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Charlie Coyner, for another great episode here as we look at Red Zone today. Charlie, great to have you here.
Keith, good to be here. And Charlie, I'm watching a lot of football on TV, and this has jumped out at me, this topic we're going to talk about today.
Absolutely. It's an important one. It's think about the Red Zone. Sometimes maybe take for granted how differently we need to practice in that area. And I can think back to, you know, my early days as a high school football coach, and I think we just did not give it enough attention. And I think it's something that needs attention in all your periods, whether that's a team period, whether that's 7-on-7, even some, you know, I didn't like to necessarily always do inside run periods, but we do like a lot of run, play, action type of periods, and I think it works well in there too. We have a great guest today to help us discuss this topic, and that's retired football coach Steve Fairchild, who's spent time at the college and NFL levels, including stops at Colorado State as the head football coach, as well as the Buffalo Bills as an offensive coordinator, San Diego Chargers, finished up at Virginia. So we're fortunate to have him on the show here today. Charlie, before we get him on, tell us a little bit about Steve.
Well, I was fortunate enough to work with Steve at the Bills 2006, and I guess it was 2006 and 7 before he got the head job at Colorado State. And I was always very impressed with just, you know, the way that Steve went about his business from a standpoint of how organized. And in his background, as he got to Buffalo, he came from the Rams and had been, you know, working with Mike Martz. And so that was always intriguing, having come from a creative mind like that and the greatest show on turf and a really a wide open offense. And we weren't prepared to do that at Buffalo. And Steve made a great adjustment coming in, looking at our personnel and how we did things. So over the past couple of weeks, just watching on Saturdays and Sundays and looking at some of the pretty strong tendencies that you see when people get in the Red Zone. And I try to be very careful about not being too critical. It's easy to have answers once you're not coaching any longer. And so but at the same time, I've looked and it just occurred to me just how predictable it looked like people were getting. So Steve came to mind as someone who has been in charge and made those calls at pretty much every level. And so he came to mind today for me as someone that I was excited about getting on here just to see what he thought about some of the things that we're going to be talking about in the Red Zone.
Well, I'm excited to have him here today. Let's get him on the line. Coach Fairchild, great to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Steve, great to talk to you again. We're excited about having someone with your wealth of experience to talk about the Red Zone today. What I started to think about as I went through the 2018 season, and, you know, sitting back and watching on TV a little bit is, you know, as we get to this point in the season, you get to where situational football comes up over and over and over every game that you watch. And the one thing that I was noticing over the last couple of weeks is coaches, as they get into the Red Zone, and I've been in those meetings before, actually with you, Steve, on some of them, where you are very planned out when you get to the level of the NFL as far as what you're going to call in different situations. And just watching it, it just occurred to me that there's a lot that goes into it really at every level. And I wanted to have you on today, if we could, just to pick your brain a little bit about the Red Zone and your thoughts on it. And I guess we'll start off by just trying to identify what you think of when you think of the Red Zone as far as areas on the field or situations. How do you look at it, Steve?
Well, I think there's a term floating around that you hear people say called high Red Zone. But as you approach the 20-yard line in, there's a certain mark where your field goal kicker feels fairly confident that you've got points on the board. So I think as a play caller, as a coordinator, going into every game, you sit with the head coach, special teams coach, the kicker, you make sure your quarterback's in on it and decide, hey, if we get to the 30 or the 32, or even if you're in college and you don't have a great kicker, it's the 26, say, but there's some yard line out there where you feel like, hey, once we've manufactured a drive to get to that point, we've got points on the board, and therefore the defense is going to treat it differently at that point as well. They're going to try to knock you out of there. So I always felt like you had to have a plan on that high end of the red zone when you feel like you've got points on the board, to not take a seven-step drop, to not run in reverse, to not maybe do an unprotected naked, that you change your philosophy into maybe prohibiting negative plays. So if you don't, in fact, punch it into the end zone on the drive, you'd at least come away with points.
As you were going through that, did you, and maybe you just said it, but did you look more at what the defense tendencies were, or was it what part of the field, or as you broke that down, and we called it, I think some places I've been, we called that the fringe, and then we got inside the actual red zone, we kind of broke it down 2016,
right.
And what were your areas, and what determined that for you? Was it strictly on the defense, or?
Well, let's go back to that fringe red zone where you feel like you've knocked on the door to scoring points. I got away from tendencies there defensively because I felt like I have to prepare for the worst. I have to assume they're going to pressure me to try to knock me out of this area where I have points. So again, the play calls were, and the game planning was geared more towards less risk plays, less negative type plays. To give you an example, I've been on teams where wide zone's a good run, but wide zone also has a chance to lose some yards. It's just that type of play. And so maybe you're more of a tight zone, and maybe if you want to play action, you protect yourself on the naked. You do whatever you can to assume they're coming after you, and I'm not going to get a negative play. Once we got into the red zone, the way I broke it down, and I know most stabs I've been on go 20 to the 11 and then 10 to the 3 and 3 on in. What I tried to do, I gave myself some options. I probably was the typical coordinator that had too many plays, but I had a list of a couple throws on the 20, couple on the 15, couple on the 10, couple on a 5. But what, in my mind, it wasn't, I couldn't call it on the 21 yard line or I couldn't call it on the 17. I just, in those, the way my brain worked in that general area, I was going to have a couple throws. And then as I got to the 15, I may have called those on the 12, but just because of the field constraint, I put them into those four areas and said, this is kind of, here's a couple drop back passes that I like. One thing I think you do have to have as a game planner and play caller is a third down call in every area, a play action call in every area. And also, and I learned this late in my career, you got to throw it into the end zone call. Fourth down and the game's running out on you. If you're on the 18-yard line, you better have a call and you better have talked it over with your quarterback that, hey, if we got to do this and I call this, that ball's got to go in the end zone. So it's a situation within a situation, so to speak.
Okay, yeah. Elaborate on that just a little bit more before Keith asks you something here. So the situation is that you're at the end of the game or the end of the half, what, third down and whatever, or maybe fourth down, and you're telling the quarterback it's incomplete or touchdown. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're saying let's go the first half one, and you've got a third and eight. You want the field goal, so you're going to be very conservative, but you're going to, if you do throw the ball, let's give ourselves a chance to score. Let's not swing the ball out of the backfield and throw it on the 8-yard line and hope the guy gets in. But more importantly, it's that fourth down call with 2 minutes left and you're down by six. And now your quarterback gets into that. This is a game-winning throw. This ball has, if we don't score, we're losing this football game. So this ball has to go into the end zone. And so right. Whether it's your version of four vertical or the pump, you and I used to do the pump 370, whatever it is, the ball's got to go into the end zone. So there are some and there's some third down, like I said. And there are some situations within that red zone situation.
Coach, when we look at those areas, and especially thinking in terms of practice, and let me preface that by saying we do have a lot of high school coaches who listen to this podcast. So for them, they might not have that fringe. I mean, sometimes you're even at the high school level, you're going to have to get inside the 20 maybe to kick a field goal. So you look at things a little bit differently. But within each of those, as you mentioned, you're planning plays that can get to the end zone with a throw from your other throws and the other things you start to plan in there. How important is it to make sure you're practicing within that area, especially as that vertical space disappears and you might have to make some slight adjustments to routes or the spacing or what have you to make sure that you have a very sound concept?
Well, you just hit on a couple really good points, and that is obviously the catalog in the NFL is more than the catalog in college, which is more than the catalog you're going to have in high school. And that's understandable because of practice time and experience of the player. But I will say this, even in the NFL, and as I worked my way down through college when I was coaching, we did a lot of research and a lot of development in the off season, spring ball, month of May when we're studying things. And we came up with what we thought, however many, and it could be different from high school to the NFL, but these are a catalog of plays we think fit this field zone. And that's the other point you make. You start to run out of vertical stretch. And so you've got to, the field doesn't shrink horizontally, it shrinks vertically. So you still have the horizontal stretch, and you've just got to say, these are the things we like, these are the things we're going to practice, and these are the things that from game to game we're going to add to our list and call. And the volume can change, and I've been around high school coaches, consulted with them, where their red zone thing is two or three plays, and it doesn't change the entire year. However, it's still well thought out. They can disguise it with formation, and they feel like in terms of the field constraints, it works. So, but that's the main thing you hit on in terms of a pass play. You just can't do some of the things that you do out in the middle of the field as you start to get into the 16-yard line, 12-yard line. So because of that field constraint, you've got to come up with things that work in those areas.
In that, on that same vein of talk right there, been in the staff room to where, and been on both sides of it, to where, you know, the offensive line coach looks at you and says, coordinator, please remember, now we get inside the 16, 15, 10-yard line, it doesn't mean that we can't still run the football and get 4 yards. And obviously, as that field shrinks vertically, Steve, those safeties are closer, and there's probably an extra linebacker in there. But what are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you ever see where you think coordinators maybe give up on the run game? And
yeah, I do. I think sometimes you get enamored with, we're switching into a new group of passes, and I feel the need. I've got to call them. I've got to use them. But I would make the comment that you're right about the line coach. He's got a good point. You know, you get there, and you've been running the football successfully. Let's not give up on the run. What you said is exactly true, though. As the field shrinks vertically, the safety play in the run game becomes a bigger and bigger factor. Even a free safety that in the middle of the field may not be a factor in the run at all, as you get inside the 10, is all of a sudden in the box and a factor on some of these plays. So the real key to the run game, I've always felt like, is how are you going to handle the eighth defender in base offense, base defense, or the seventh defender in nickel offense, nickel defense. And you have that question when you do your run game meeting and you're talking about the middle of the field. The defenses are always going to try to have the extra hat down in there on a potential run situation. So whether it's motioning, cutting splits of receivers to get on that extra defender, whether you're using your RPO game, whether you're using the quarterback run in college and high school, however you say, this is how I'm dealing with the extra defender, that's got to carry on into the red zone and perhaps get even a little tighter or a little more severe on you, but you still have to be able to run the football. Once you get one dimensional at any level, you're making it easy on the defense. I will say this, late in my career, well, I guess my last college coordinator job was 2015, something that we got good at both at the middle of the field, and it really carried over well in the run game in the red zone, was the fly sweep action. And I thought at that point, I thought, this is going to carry over into the NFL. This stuff's too good if you're doing it right. And you're starting to see that become, as I break down NFL film this season for various people, that's becoming a much bigger part of the NFL run game than it had been.
But the Kansas City Chiefs were doing it, so you're exactly right. I saw that.
Yeah, in fact, there are times in my last year as a coordinator in college, it was a better option for us on the 3-yard line than getting in goal line personnel. And so and I see a lot of people doing it right. It's a whole nother podcast talking about that. But there are some people doing it right. There's some people that don't know what they're doing. But if you do that right, it's a good 6-8 play thing in your offense that can really boost your run game.
Coach, in looking at this, and you kind of hinted towards it, I know for me, when we would get into this area, especially as we would get a little bit tighter, say the 15 and in, I started to look at and study personnel, both, you know, what we could do with ours, as well as what an opponent was going to do. And quite often I'd have some opponents who weren't going to change personnel. I would have others that would match with us. But what I started to think about, that maybe some of those speedier slot receivers I might use in the open field for run game considerations, and sometimes just that height mismatch that, you know, you might need to go up for a ball and high point it, because again, you're not going to run under it. The field space is vertical space is disappearing. So I would look for maybe some of those guys. A lot of times we would grow tight ends, so we would have those tweeners we were trying to beef up, and, you know, a little bit taller and could block a little bit. We weren't necessarily going to put their hand in the dirt, but they could go in and get a safety too, and then, you know, decent on corner routes and have that kind of height. How much for you did you start to look at personnel, and what can we do essentially to still run our concepts but potentially put a better skill set in there in that particular area?
I think that's the name of the game, and I think it's becoming the name of the game, or is the name of the game, out in the middle of the field as well, but even more magnified in the red zone as the coverage goes from tight to tighter. You've got to make the contested catch. So is it a size issue? Is it a matchup issue? What are you doing to give your offense the chance to make a play when it's going to be a tight contested ball? You saw it last night. You know, they found a way to get Gurley on the linebacker, 10-yard line going vertical. So it doesn't have to be a big receiver. That's part of it. But it can be, like you said, the hybrid tight ends. If you have a Kelsey or a tight end there, that may be your best mismatch. And how do you get him on a linebacker or safety? It may be a back out of the backfield. I know this whole thing started for me when I had a chance to work with the Rams. And we could get him to put the nickel on a slot receiver, and then Marshall Faulk would come out of the backfield and be a bigger mismatch on anybody else than that was. So, yeah, that's – no matter where you are on the field, but especially in the red zone, getting the matchup is probably as important as anything in the pass game.
Coach, as we look at some of the newer trends, especially you have the read game with the quarterback. We mentioned a little bit of quarterback run, but RPO obviously is just huge right now, and everybody is looking at how do I do this from basically every personnel group. I see guys running it out of 21 personnel now. What are your thoughts on the RPO down in this area? Do you feel it becomes a little bit harder to execute again? So maybe some of that vertical space and where, you know, safeties can lock down a little bit more, or is that something you feel you could stay with in this area?
You can stay with it, but it's like every other form of the pass game. It's going to get tighter. And whether you're using bubble type wide receiver screens as your throw option, or maybe you've got a double slant or slant flat on the backside of a wide zone that you're using. Go back, the RPOs were in the NFL in the 90s. I mean,
yeah,
people were,
yeah,
you know, smoking wide receivers on the backside of powers, you know. So, but whatever your definition and version of an RPO is and what you're using, and sometimes it's people want the quarterback to run, not throw it. There's a three-way go. It's not the running back. It's the running back to throw and the fact the quarterback could carry it. So, that again is a whole nother podcast, but whatever you're doing with that, I think it still has merit as you approach the red zone and get into the red zone. But you have to understand some of those route concepts are going to be like every other pass concept you have, and that the coverage is going to be a little bit tighter.
Steve, as I watch on Saturdays and Sundays, and I don't get to watch as much Friday, obviously you can't be everywhere to see that, but sometimes as I'm watching, and I'll just clump it all together here, as offenses get into the tight red zone, it kind of ties into what Keith brought up a little bit ago. I mean, I just see that a lot of coordinators are, looks like to me, they're, if they get that personnel mismatch out there with the one receiver and the fade ball, that's their go-to call. There's nothing wrong with that, particularly if you've got a great personnel matchup out there. But I look at it sometimes and I go, well, the defense understands that too, and they've obviously got their best guy out there in that situation. I look at that, and I also look at the two-point plays where sometimes I'm watching on Saturday and I'm calling out the pick pass before it ever happens these days. And so did you ever feel like you got so limited down there that It was just a matter of, this is what we're running and y'all know it, and whoever executes it best is going to be successful, or are we limiting ourselves too much in those situations?
Yeah, I was never that limited. I was fortunate to work with some very creative minds throughout my career, and they deliberately weren't going to run the pick, pass, or the fade just to make a point that there was, we can scheme this thing up and get efficient enough in our execution to run plays inside the 5 yard line that we like. But I do think there is a place, if you got a big receiver and you want to throw the fade, there's a place for it. I think where the thing with that to me is you got to be very detailed in your split and where you're throwing the football, because obviously that ball's got to be high and outside, but your receiver's got to be in bounds. And that sounds easy, but cut your split too far, there's no longer a slant threat. So now you get outside leverage. So you got to really think through your field dimensions, whether you're in high school, college, or the NFL, and be very detailed on how you coach that. Because too often you just see a guy run out of bounds or catch it out of bounds. Then you really get frustrated because you never gave yourself a chance. But
right.
There's a place for it. But to me, like we did, Charlie, you know, we forced four out on 940F stop swing. Things were there's a lot of creative concepts down there to where you don't have to settle for that. And there's a lot of creative 2-point plays where you don't always have to put the ball in the left hash with the right-handed quarterback and roll out and try and pick it and make it work. So good concepts. I'm not hanging my hat on them necessarily. And I'm like you, half the time you can call those things before they ever happen just by the personnel group and the formation.
Coach, if you would, as we tie this up, I know you mentioned a play right there, but if you could talk us through a couple of your favorites in the red zone, I think that would provide some great ideas here for our listeners.
Well, it's a little difficult without being on a grease board.
Yeah.
With them old school,
we'll chart these up and share those with our listeners. So,
yeah, if Charlie draws that one up, Charlie, remember we used to do the pump 370.
I did.
You know, with the F shoot or H bullets out of the backfield.
Yep.
I always liked that because you put the slot to the wide side of the field, and in any middle closed defense, free safety, you could get them to cheat that way usually. And then you had what amounted to your tight end, if you liked him, on a double move down the seam into the boundary, and a back if you had one that could run, which you're seeing a lot more now in college and the NFL, these bullet routes out of the backfield. So the middle closed defenses, you had your basically a four vertical concept up the boundary with a double move and a back out of the backfield on a linebacker perhaps. So I always liked that. And then if you got the middle close, you always had one of those receivers from the slot getting a rub and coming back across the field into the boundary. So when you got to the quarters type defenses, red two type defenses, you were knocking a couple of underneath coverage guys out of there. They would carry the tight end in the back, and you'd have a receiver crossing the field coming over. So that's always been, through the ages, that's been a good route. And you can disguise it a million different ways, personnel it different, and it's always been made the game plan as far as I'm concerned. And that's a good 20-15 type route. You probably call it all the way down to the 12-yard line. That one, I always enjoyed that route. And
I'm sitting here looking at it because you sent it to me this morning. We will, like Keith is talking up, we'll get that drawn up. If you listen to the podcast right now, just be sure to go to the USA Football website or to First Down Playbook, and we'll have that drawn up. But the thing that jumps out to me, Steve, as you're describing it and I'm looking at it, and I just wrote it up 2 days ago, that Patrick Mahomes, one of his red zone touchdowns, was a double nod, really, is what it was. I mean,
yeah.
They did a great job of scheming that up, and essentially they had Tyreek Hill over to the right side and Mahomes stared him down, and the free safety with middle field closed and 13-yard line, and free safety had to jump Hill. They sent the back right at the underneath backer and threw the nod to the tight end to the boundary. And it was
it's just got a lot of coverage answers. And then, Charlie, the other thing, too, as you look at that thing I had sent you, that people are – they're using the X when the free safety doesn't cheat. They like that matchup. And then also the X mm-hmm. can be a tight inside fade if your receiver's not a nifty-footed guy but maybe more of a long strider, big go-get-the-ball type guy. So – you're not limited to that exact way I drew it up, but it's got a lot of answers for both middle closed and middle open defense. So that one was always a good one. You know, another one, and I think I sent it to you, with the dart on the backside and
yep.
kind of a hammer or a high-low on the front side. I think as you get close, those high-low things where you can run the back of the end zone, are good if they zone you off, and you got to have an answer if they zone you off. And so you can put two receivers to a slot and stack them and kind of have that dart fade type of thing going. And your dart guy has to be smart enough to where if they trade it off and the outside guy lets him go and plays the fade, he's got to get out of that thing on a pivot before the inside guy can cover him. And so that has a lot of great man answers. It takes a little work, but it's got some great man answers. And then if you can, you know, like I said, a hammer high-low concept over there on the other side, just so if they two safety you and zone you, you have something you like. And the other thing we did, Charlie, and it's not drawn in there, but they're good. And I started doing this. Now you got to hold the ball a little bit so your line coaches get very nervous. But when you start spinning those backside in the back of the end zone, those things where you're running the back line, you don't have to go very far, but just a couple steps into it and then come out of that thing. And those are all always really, really good. And so I like those. And then like you and I didn't send it to you, but that 940 stuff where you pour four guys out to the same side, man or zone, it's a wonderful way to get creative because you can make it look, you can start empty and get over there. And I've seen teams in the NFL doing just some stuff. I thought, wow, why didn't I think of that when I was coaching? But there's great ways to disguise it, and it's very hard on a defense, man or zone, to get to the fourth guy, especially in that tight area. So those are always – I would draw those three up. I would suggest anybody consider a version of those as part of their base red zone idea.
Coach, in looking at those plays, they're both five-man protected plays. One, you're motioning out to an empty. And I actually liked using empty – in that area too. And I have one I really liked from about the 22 to the 15. And then another one that I would use inside the 15. And I felt they were really both two effective plays for us. And then we would use a version of a stick with a backside double slant and then the knot off of that play. So essentially it was a four play package that we would use and constantly put stress on the defense for. I know a lot of people get to that area and they think, oh, I can't five-man protect. To you, what are some of the keys to be able to do that?
Well, number one, let me start with this, is you can six-man protect both those.
Right.
And so if you look at the nod, you can bring the fullback back in and have him check. And even on the dark play where your Y is sitting down and being the underneath part of the high low, he can come from the backfield and have protection responsibilities because again, you're only using it in middle open looks. So, I mean, you can force this into a six man protection package if you feel like you're playing somebody that's going to be a little more pressure oriented and just feel better as a staff, as that's the way to go. But to answer your question, I still believe five man protection is outstanding if your quarterback's dialed in. I mean, if your quarterback knows the looks, And again, we're on to a whole nother podcast, but
sure.
You got to force it into three down, four down, five down. I mean, that's just you, between your center and your quarterback, they've got to be on the same page. Are we seeing this as three down, four down, five down? And where are we going? Then five-man protection gives you the best route combinations, and I don't think is any more risky. In fact, places where I've been, that's been the most successful protection because at least you're getting the ball out when it doesn't look like a good look for you.
Coach, we're going to have to get you on another time to talk about the speed sweep stuff and the empty and five-man protections here. But really enjoyed talking to you about the red zone here and some of the details you gave us, and I think it's going to be helpful to our listeners.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. I'd love to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Steve, now, while we got you on here, before we let you go, and we do appreciate you being with us this morning, You are, I believe, working with quarterbacks out there as a quarterback training, college and NFL quarterbacks as a consultant. And I want to make sure I have this right. If people are interested, and I know there are a lot of people out there that do that these days, but very few have the experience and background that you do, having worked with people like Mike Martz and the Rams and Buffalo Bills and places like that. But is it FairchildQuarterbackTraining.com? Is that right?
Yeah, that's my website. It's something I've done for coached 34 years in college and the NFL, and have always worked with quarterbacks. And when I transitioned into this other phase of football, I wanted to keep that on the field training going. And I've got, like I said, clients that are playing in the NFL, playing in college. I enjoy training them. I do it nationally, and it's a lot of fun for me to stay on the field doing that. So Yeah, FairchildQBTraining.com, and I do some consulting for some NFL and people and write up people for the draft. So I've got a good little gig going and kind of enjoying life. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Appreciate talking ball anytime I can, and would love to do it again with you guys sometime.
Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach.
You bet. Take care. Bye now.
Well, Charlie, I was really impressed with the way Coach thinks about this area. It's obvious that he's very detailed, that he's somebody who's really put the time into studying what should be done there. And you could tell that he had a lot of attention to detail in the way that he approached it.
Exactly. And the things that, Keith, I think that you saw there listening to him talk is that he even brought back things that I'd kind of forgotten about. At the NFL, it gets to a new level, and not just for the obvious reason about the players. I mean, you've got to be thinking about 3 points mean something. And Steve brought that up as far as, you know, when you get into the red zone, you're not only thinking about how to stick it in and, you know, find a way to get 6 or 7 points, you're also very aware of what you need to do to protect that 3 points that you already have if you've got a good kicker and you're in that area. The way that you go about the game as far as formations and what play you're going to call are very important, because you still, you know, it may not be quite like it used to be, but you still look, and last couple of weeks I've noticed those Sunday afternoons, you've got about 5 or 6 games at the same time that are going right down to the wire. So you don't want to look up and be, you're getting sacked. You're like Steve was talking about, you're running a naked bootleg, and which is maybe a good chance to take some at some point in the game, but not in the red zone when that 3 points matters.
And I think everybody has that point. Obviously, when you look at the NFL or the FBS level, those kickers are going to hit from farther out, and you get to a point where you understand where that is, and there's points on the board. But even at the high school level, while that may be closer to the goal line, we still have that point where we need to think about, okay, we do have these points here for us. How do we approach these next downs? And Steve really brought that out.
He did, and he brought up another great point. The field shrinks vertically down there, but it does not shrink horizontally. I think he brought the point up about jet sweeps, and I see that on Saturday, and I know that's a big part of the game that's being played on the weekends at the high school level too. So I that was something that kind of jumped out to me, that even though you're sitting down there and you got the run pass options that we were talking about, there is a chance to not only use the jet sweep as part of your RPO and part of the way that you're trying to find holes when you get down inside the 20-yard line.
Yeah, the space is harder to find down there, but it is still there if we look at it creatively, as well as how we maybe adjust some of our typical concepts to account for that vertical space disappearing. And Steve gave us some great ideas. I know you're going to share those with our listeners on First Down Playbook, and we'll get those up on our blogs at usafootball.com as well. Charlie, tell our listeners how they can find those.
Absolutely. We'll get those drawn up in the two plays that he had in the red zone. And Keith, I think you may have had an empty one or two that you were talking about. We can get that drawn up too. You'll be able to find those firstdownplaybook.com. That's spelled out FIRSTDOWN playbook.com.
Charlie, I appreciate you spending the time with us and getting Steve Fairchild on the phone. As always, that was both entertaining as well as educational in terms of just being able to pick up some great ideas from a guy who's been there.
Exactly. And like he said, there were about 4 podcasts inside the podcast, so he would be somebody to always keep in mind anytime you get talking about a lot of topics on offense. So it was great to have him, and great to be with you again, Keith. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Sounds good, Charlie.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.